This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris, and today we've got Senator Bob Wachowski. He was elected in 2014 and represents the 10th Senate District in the California State Legislature. The district stretches from Southern Alameda County into Santa Clara County. He serves on a number of Senate committees as well, including Judiciary, Budget and Fiscal Review, Transportation and Housing, and Ethics. And he's been one of the leading voices pushing for housing solutions, including legislation on accessory dwelling units, in hopes to help out with California's affordability issues and lack of new construction. Senator Wachowski's background is as a small business owner and a bankruptcy attorney, and so glad to have him today to talk about ADUs. So thank you for joining the show. I guess the first question is, depending on who you ask, California by 2021, I think I saw, is 1.5 to 3.5 million housing units short of where we need to be. Is there any update on that?
That's about correct. There is some obvious construction going on right now for the lag that occurred in the recession, but we would have to keep today's pace going for a decade or so just to make up for the lost time when nobody was building anything.
We just recently interviewed the California Building Industry Association, and it was nice to hear that they were very pro accessory dwelling units, which we'll get into in a second. But one of the things that they said in the interview is that California has the longest timeline from raw land entitlements up to 15 years, where the next state with the worst numbers are Florida at 18 months. So why is California so difficult to build, and is that a concern?
Oh, it's a gigantic concern. I mean, we have our California CEQA Act that we want to make sure that things are open and notorious, that people understand what the process is, and if we're going to destroy an endangered species, that's it. But, you know, I'm the chair of the Senate Environmental Quality Committee, and so I'm ground zero on laws that people have that would overturn CEQA. So the creativeness that people have because of the frustration, the desire to overturn the landmark legislation that we have is high. What also occurs is that people don't realize it's the discretion that local governments have that will trigger a CEQA review. There's been quite a lot of discussion recently in the legislature about a by right, where you create local laws that you have an absolute right to build a four-story structure, and it can be commercial, it can be industrial, it can be residential, and you take away that discretion, or the local government takes the discretion away from themselves and saying, we're going to allow you to do this, which would take that 18-year period and shrink it down quite a bit for the construction cost. So it's a mixed pot of exactly what causes the delays, but they're nevertheless over there and, you know, a big concern for us.
Well, and I guess that leads perfectly into accessory dwelling units. I've heard of granny flats and casitas, but the ADU, how did that conversation get started, and how did you become one of the forefathers of the California ADU movement?
Well, we had to come up with a different invention. We sort of invented accessory dwelling units because with a second unit or a grandma flat, what we saw in California, at least, you know, in the last 15 years, I mean, we had legislation in 2002 that required cities to develop second unit ordinances, and they all did, all 492, but they made it so restrictive and so many barriers that would come up. You know, you got Pasadena that's got a minimum lot size of 15,000 feet. I mean, who has a 15,000 foot lot? I mean, I have a 50 by 100 foot lot, 5,000 square feet. You know, people have 6,000, 4,000, but that's typically tract homeland in California, which is a big chunk of this property. So we came to the conclusion that if we said that they were accessory from the mother house, that they're part of the homeowner's right that they have, that they can, you know, like you go to the department store, you accessorize it with a bracelet. It's not a brand new outfit, it's a bracelet. Well, I built a 440 foot addition onto my house. My wife got a brand new kitchen, and we got a new bathroom, and then extended. We took the smallest room and made it our largest room. I had a one-day permit in the city of Fremont, that I paid probably $1,000 for the permit, but it was over the counter. Here are my plans. It was one day and it was done. That's not the rule now. There's people in Santa Barbara, up and down in different cities since the legislation was passed. They're still waiting for a permit, even though they're required to get one, within 4 months. And hopefully we can change that to 2 months.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time with John Aronson, who really helped me with this chapter that we're producing, and he says he won't even work with some of the cities. And there's a few things going on. Number one, they're busier, so they're hiring more people, and they may or may not know what they're doing. Things are getting caught up. Things are taking longer, so there's a lot of things different going on, but he says some are so difficult, even with the new legislation, he won't have people where he doesn't want to work with some of them. So lots going on. Senate Bill 1069 is where it all started. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Tell me the process, how it gets started and how was it received along the way?
Well, I mean, I was sort of fed up with cities saying we want to have local control. And what that meant was that we're going to have a roadblock and these barriers that folks would have. And I would say that If we're going to have local control, I'm going to give it directly to the homeowner and let her decide what she wants to do with her property. So the big barriers that we knew were parking. You had to have off-street parking on your lot. If you converted your garage, you had to build a brand new parking garage. And we realized that in normal suburbia, a lot of people have 4 or 5 cars anyway. So there's no restriction on how many cars they could have. And we would think that if we put an ADU, we said you have an absolute right if you're within a half mile of some transit or you're in some transit, you had an absolute right to do it. That, and we took away the ability of cities to place a parking barrier on folks. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal. So that was sort of the first thing. And then this other thing, if you have people have an absolute right to construct either to convert any portion of their existing house into an ADU by right. There was no appeal. There's no anything. So, again, everybody knows somebody who's sitting in a 3,000 square foot house that's got, maybe it's just a couple. And if they want to put a kitchen in or change a window to a door, it's going to cost them $40,000 from the city. So we wanted to say, if you want to slice up your, reconfigure your house, you had an absolute right. And if you want to reconfigure your garage, you had an absolute right. And those were sort of the big barriers that we punched through with 1069. And, it was a little mini revolution we had going.
Well, and I guess I tuned in sort of late, so by the time I was really paying attention in 2017, I'm like, oh my gosh, did cities love this or hate this?
Right, it was ridiculous. I had to go back the next year in 2017 because some cities were saying you didn't define what tandem parking was in the legislation. So I had to go back and describe what tandem parking was in the legislation. Because some people could park two people, on their driveway, right? Because the side of their house is all cement or some crazy thing like that. And then I allowed the water districts and the sewer districts to get a proportional fee. Cause that was, the last minute you're making all these deals, right? And I said, okay, they can get a proportional fee, which meant, again, you're in the Inland Empire. Somebody has a 3-bedroom, 2-bath tract home. That house was built in 1972 for 4 people in the bedroom, mommy, daddy, and 2 little kids. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you got 2 people living there. Maybe some houses you got 14, but normally the sewer system and the water system and all the impacts that would occur, somebody paid for that when they bought the house, but also they're not being overused. So I said, if I put in an ADU and there's still only 3 people or 4 people on the property, what's the change of service? They said that I didn't list water districts in the bill. So they, after negotiating with me in 2016 and 2017, they say this law doesn't apply to me. I use it as an example to say the governmental agencies, and it could be cities and counties, but also be the water districts and school districts, are doing everything they can to thwart the homeowner's right or the ability to to build these little cottages or convert their garage into a livable space when we're in the middle of a housing crisis.
Yeah, right? And I guess we haven't properly identified accessory dwelling unit. If somebody's completely new, this set of laws really make it possible to do a few things, either detached or attached, whether it's a granny flat or casitas in the back. There's some rules, and it varies by city now, but there's also attached, so a converted basement, an attic, or a garage that was previously unpermitted. You can end up turning that into efficiency unit. There's a lot of flexibility. It's pretty amazing. And I was really surprised that you specifically left it very open. I thought it was done well. I understand the parking, and it made a lot of sense. Has things gotten better? Because I noticed there is a new Senate. So it went from Senate Bill 1069. The updated version was SB 229 to address things like tandem parking and more of the utilities, I guess. And then I saw 831 come out. So clearly other things are going on. So are you happy with the progress, or was 831 like, oh boy, we're going to have to dig in more?
Well, 831 was the process that we have to dig in more, because I was finding out what the cities were doing. The cities were, the cities were responding. I mean, homeowners were responding. I mean, I think that one of the stats I like to say is that over 23 years, Santa Barbara had less than one ADU approved every year, one per year. Mm-hmm. And in 2017, when 1069 went into effect, they had something like, 38 or 68 people that applied for an ADU. So there's a desire for people to come in. So an 831, what we did is we looked at the other barriers. And one of the big barriers was fees. Now, I tried to do this in 1069, but I had to drop it. But I said, there are developer impact fees that you, a developer, pays when you build your McMansion, or you build a bunch of tract homes, whatever you do. You build your fourplex. What cities do is they apply that developer impact fee to a private homeowner who's putting an ADU on their backyard. And again, this could be $5,000, $10,000, $20,000, $40,000.
Yeah.
It's just the, and I argued that you are not developers, these are homeowners. They already paid the impact fee in 1977 when the house was built. So that was one of the goals. The other is Los Angeles says that they believe that there are 300,000 unpermitted units in the county of in Los Angeles. So if there are three, and the reason people don't have a permit when they build the unit is because they don't want to pay the money to the governmental agency, or the restrictions are so ridiculous. So I tried to fashion a more amnesty program that we could get these people that come out of the woodwork and get their unit legalized. And we were looking at, some of these, if it's unsafe or unhealthy, then all bets are off. But if it meets the safety and health codes from when it was built. So let's just take 1985. As a date, if you build the ADU in 1985 and you build it to code in 1985, obviously, whatever the code is today is different, you would still be able to get a permit. If you didn't build it to code, then the administrator of the city could pull it out. So that was sort of the biggest fee, the second thing. And then the third bit was some of the cities were coming in and saying that they was requiring people to put deed restrictions on their houses that said that they were the homeowner, or that they resided in the house that they lived in. They put in homeowner residence requirements so that you could only have an ADU if you lived in one of the units or the ADU. And there's two problems with that. The first is that it's unconstitutional because no other type of housing product has that restriction, right? We don't make apartment owners live in their apartments. We don't let anybody else do it. And the second is that the banks were saying, we are going to call back all the loans that are out there because we're not going to occupy a house if we foreclose on it. We don't want to do that. We may have to foreclose, and we can't send the guy from the Bank of America to live in the house under your local restriction. So the other thing was the other element, one of the elements of 831 was to say there's no requirement. You can't require the owner of the house to live in a unit that has an ADU. And I see that was controversial, but it's what we had to do.
So you're saying get rid of owner-occupied completely?
Correct. Throughout the state.
Wow, that would be a big change. And that is something that we're seeing pop up quite a bit. And I've seen, as we're doing research on ordinance by city, that they've added not only the owner-occupied language, some of them are going as far as you cannot do a vacation rental. And that I can understand just simply because of the nature of what this was supposed to accomplish. So I get that.
And again, I was silent on Airbnb in 1069, and I was silent on Airbnb in 831. And I'll give you, I represent Southeast Bay, Fremont, you know, with Tesla, and Santa Clara with the 49ers, who are, you know, who knows what they're going to do this year. But I know that they're going to have a big, college playoff is going to come to Levi Stadium, and they're going to have a Super Bowl that's going to come to Levi Stadium. Somebody that has an Airbnb in Milpitas, nobody comes to Milpitas for a vacation rental. It's just not there. But on those special events, I can see somebody in these towns to say, hey, you're right by the trolley. It's 15 minutes to the game, and rent out their ADU for a week and make bank, right? I'm agnostic about that stuff, but that's one of those things where I said, let each locality control that, and they can make them, let it exist or let it not exist. And that's for, as far as I'm concerned, that's not what I'm worried about. I'm worried about housing people.
Understood. And so where is 831, and what do you think the future of getting those things through will be?
Well, 831 is dead. We closed our session on Friday at the end of August, August 31st. So for this legislative session, that two-year effort of mine is dead. The idea is not destroyed, however, because, you know, it's a, it's, you know, I can, my, you know, we encounter many defeats, and this measure was defeated, but the ideas are not going to be defeated, because too many homeowners are depending on Bob Wieckowski. They don't know my name, Bob Wieckowski, but they know they want ADU reform. So we're gonna reintroduce a similar version of 831 in January when we return. In fact, I may do it in December, just so I get a low bill number, because I feel so passionate or about this idea of releasing these barriers for home ownership and allowing people to develop their property as they want for the benefit of folks living in their community and in their backyard. And it's just, if we're in a crisis, you got to respond like you're in a crisis. And that's I understand the bias that people have about backyard secondary units and granny units and all that, and I don't put much weight into it. I can see that, you know, some people mismanage their house. They have a beautiful house, it's worth $1 million, and it looks like it's been trashed when you drive by it, and that can happen to a small little place in somebody's backyard. So
sure, yeah, we're real. A lot of people who listen to this are real estate investors, so that's our business. So yeah, that's why we get these things. I guess the issue I'm seeing on our side for real estate investors is they're taking the spray, pray, and pay approach, where they're just buying something, assuming that they can build whatever they want, praying it's going to be fine, and then they end up paying because they get caught or get held up for sometimes very important reasons, like maybe it's under a live wire, and where the city is saying, yeah, please, utility, just go ahead and waive that. Have the owner sign a non-liability, but maybe it's a publicly owned utility where the utility is like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and not pass that risk on to our users. So some of it's really important. And if investors aren't asking the right questions, because the way that the bill was written, there is some flexibility now with the cities to go, okay, just for safety reasons, this is a historical district, you can't have them there. So investors just have to be careful and do their homework.
Right. And I don't want to, if there's a fire zone, we know that we've built a lot of houses in fire zones, and you say, okay, you can't take the house out, but you say, well, why not want to add to the problem and put people in harm's way? You know, what I'd like to see, and I think is going to happen, is, you know, some financial product that's coming out of the banking community for ADU owners, you know, because you've got, you know, I guess colloquially, mom-pa kettle who don't have, they've got Social Security coming in, but they live on a gold mine across the street from Google up here. And, you know, they don't have on paper the cash flow to show that they could sustain it. But you realize that if you build it, somebody will live there and walk across the street. That type of individual could buy it. For your real estate investors, you know, I think the amnesty program could be, I would really want to partner with the real estate investors because they're going to find some place that somebody's got an illegal unit, an unpermitted unit. And if they go through the 831 scenario and say, we should be able to participate in this amnesty program if it got done, then you're going to either be able to advise homeowners that, hey, listen, this is, you're going to have to do this and this to get this permanent, but then it's a source of income from you. If you're a young person that's going in, that may, you know, I can see a family buying a unit where they would rent out the three-bedroom house and live in the ADU until they have kids and then flip it and say, okay, we're going to rent out the ADU and live in the big part. I mean, it's unfortunate financially in California, you got to talk that way, but there are some people that's a bit a thing, or it's, you know, you get your kids, your kids grow away, move away, one's in Phoenix, one's in Oregon, and you want to spend some time with the grandkids, mm-hmm. but you only get to spend 6 months in San Bernardino. You might as well live in the 600 unit in the back, get rid of some of your junk and go live with your grandkids, right?
Yeah.
It offers lots of opportunities for people to be creative in the real estate arena.
What are the thoughts that the legislation will pass as far as being able to move your basis statewide? Is that looking good or?
Oh yeah, it's funny, Aaron. 3 years ago, when I first introduced the 1069, and I was at the podium presenting, I didn't have any friends. Nobody knew what I was talking about. It was like, what's an accessory dwelling unit? You know, there was no folks. And then a miracle happened. The real estate people said, hey, who is this guy from Fremont? And environmental groups and other groups and even the banking institutions said, hey, you know, we always like new product. This is a different type of thing. So in the 3 years since the introduction of 1069 to today, the enthusiasm and the list of supporters is growing. And then when people like your listeners drill down and find out what are some of these remaining roadblocks, and they look at 831 and they say that yes, that would really open up the floodgates, because, you know, since 1069 passed, the ADU construction has increased in California 63% is what my staff tells me. And if this next series of barriers is removed, I expect it to go up. I mean, I think, you know, when you go back to your million and a half, 3.5 million shortage, I don't think if we have a half a million ADUs that exist in the hidden, and, you know, we don't know that they exist, I don't think it's unreasonable to say that California could sustain in a five-year period a million more units.
Well, we'll have to keep each other posted. I really appreciate you taking the time, and thank you for taking this on. It's such a creative solution, and hopefully the word will get out. More people will do it. I think it's going to help a lot of people.
I agree with you 100%, and we'll be back at it when the legislature reconvenes in January of 2019.
Is there anywhere that you would recommend people to go to find out status of where things sit?
You know, my website is probably as good as any. We got a whole little section on ADUs, and we'll be updating it as we get to a new bill and trying to really focus on these barriers that we have and what we're trying to get done.
Well, and when December and January rolls around, we'd love to have you back on too, and, you know, just to make it people more aware, and it'd be awesome to support you.
We have the uncut version of this interview with Senator Wachowski in the portal under Accessory Dwelling Unit, and it's for VIP subscribers. If you haven't looked at the VIP subscription, check out thenorrisgroup.com/premium. We just added 4 brand new chapters, including accessory dwelling units, and we're only going to keep adding to this because it's a great opportunity for real estate investors in California in the year ahead, but is definitely changing, and we will definitely have him back. Please also note we've just added a market timing event January 26th. Bruce Norris will be presenting in Riverside, California, California Real Estate on Borrowed Time, his latest predictions and forecasts for the years ahead for California and where he's going and why. It's all on the website. Check it out under events.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.